These people, essentially, my biological family, were in plain sight my entire life.
Hello, you are listening to NPE Stories. This is a podcast where NPEs can share their story. I am your host, Lily, and I found out I was an NPE through an ancestry DNA test that changed my life forever. NPE is a term that stands for not parent expected or non-paternal event. This means that one or more of our parents are not who we believe them to be. NPE Stories is a podcast where NPEs can share their story of what their original family was like, how they found out they were an NPE, and what their journey has been like since the day they found out. Welcome to episode 194, and today I am speaking with Margot. Hi, Margot.
Hi, Lily. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for doing this. We're going by your pen name today, Margot Riley, and your real name is Jill Krasenovich. Am I saying that correct?
Correct. Yep. Thank you. So we can go interchangeably between those two names. I'm fine.
Wonderful. Margot Riley, pen name. So are you an author?
I am an author. I actually published a book in 2022, right at the start of 2022, and it was a memoir about a bit of this life I'm going to fill you in on now. And at the time, I did not have the NPE experience under my belt. So that book is a little bit of a precursor to the story we're going to hear today.
What was the name of that book?
That book is called When the Apple Falls Far from the Tree, and it was basically a story of being raised in a chaotic childhood and upbringing and turning out to be quite different than my parents. And of course, now we know why that is.
So you have to do an update on that. Are you writing about your NPE experience?
I am. Quite literally, when I finished writing that last memoir and published it is when I embarked on my NPE journey, which has been now a total of 2.5 years. And I have been writing through the rawness of all of it. And I should be completed with my manuscript here this spring, and I'm hoping that it will come out later this summer. And since the first book was titled When the Apple Falls Far from the Tree, this memoir is going to be called When You Shake the Family Tree.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to read it. Good for you for writing about this experience. We need more resources, more content, more books in our little community. So I can't wait to read it, and thank you for putting in the time to do that.
Thank you. I agree that the resources are so important. These podcasts, these books, these authors that are out there telling their story, that's basically how I've gotten through in the past 2.5 years. And so I feel that I want to contribute to that. So hopefully it will help somebody else along their healing journey.
It really will. And so let's get into learning more about your childhood. Why don't you tell me who was in your family of origin and what that was like for you?
All right, will do. Well, I am 49 years old. I was born in 1974 in a small city just south of Buffalo, New York. I'm a middle child. I have two brothers, one of which is 2 years older than me, and one of which is 3.5 years younger than me. And I wish this is where I could insert an origin story of a lovely, normal-ish childhood. But the truth of the matter is, I grew up in a very toxic and chaotic household. My parents could not stand each other whatsoever from what I can remember as a child. And to be honest with you, I don't really recall anything about us as a family unit per se. It was always either we were with my mother or with my father or a babysitter or grandparents or whatever. So I don't really have much recollection of any good times, if you will. My parents were both severe alcoholics. My father was a very hard worker, and he worked whenever he could. He worked at a factory just down the road from us, so he was gone putting in a lot of hours. And when he was home, he was drunk. He drank a lot. He played musical instruments, several of them, and was always jamming out and had buddies over to jam out with him and kind of was in his own little world when he wasn't working hard. My mother was pretty much missing in action as I was a child. I don't remember her being home very often. She was always gone. We had a ton of babysitters, several of which who actually lived in the household with us at times. And as I mentioned earlier, we were either there with my mom, who would be there briefly, we would be with my dad, who was, you know, home drinking and partying it up, or we would be with these babysitters, but never really with a unit of adults at the same time. My mother was a waitress and a bartender at several local establishments, and she was also a pretty big drinker and partier. So she was always gone into the wee hours of the night. And I can remember many, many times as a small child when she would get home in the middle of the night, the house erupting in very crazy verbal fights about where she had been and who she had been with and why she wasn't home sooner. So when I recall my parents as a family, that's basically what I remember about them. I don't have anything fond to remember. And I do remember as a small child really starving for the attention of both of them and never getting it. My mother lived a very promiscuous party life, as I said. There was tons of fighting going on there. And my earliest childhood memory is actually a really, really traumatic one. My mother had been gone as usual, working. My father had been probably a case deep into his beer drinking after work. And I was just about 4 years old. So I think my fourth birthday was like maybe a month away. And I was caretaking for my baby brother, who was just a few months old. I was entertaining him on my parents' bedroom bed, and I was kind of like jumping and popping him around a little bit and making him giggle at me. Again, he was just a few months old, and I was just about to turn four. And I remember my father kept telling me to stop it and yelling from the other room. And for whatever reason, I did not take heed of his warning. And at some point, he lashed out and stormed into the room, literally grabbed me, threw me at the ceiling like a ton of bricks, and I fell to the ground like a ton of bricks, and my legs was broken in several places, and I crawled around the house for hours, or what seemed like an eternity, crying for help and saying that I thought something was wrong with my leg. And it wasn't until my mother arrived home late in the middle of the night when she saw what he had done, and I told her. And then she proceeded to hit my father and scream and yell at him, and they had war. And then my mother groomed me for the fake story that we were going to tell the emergency room when we got there. And the ride there, we rehearsed the lie that I was going to tell them, that I had fallen off the bed from jumping. And just like we rehearsed, I went into the emergency room and told the story, which they took verbatim, and I was on my way home. Little did I know this was going to be the first of many lies and stories my mom was going to make me believe coming up. So I'm happy to say my father never abused me again after that. It was a very isolated incident, and he definitely had remorse for doing that. But I can also say in hindsight that that is where I disconnected from my father. Now, in retrospect, looking back, things were never the same, obviously, after he hurt me to that degree. And my parents divorced a short time later when I was just about 6 years old. My mother was actually having an affair with a man who she was sneaking into our house while my father was still there, type thing. Like, he would leave for work and this guy would come. And it's a horrible story, but I was even asked to leave my bedroom once so that they could come hang out in my bedroom while I was sleeping down the hall in my brother's room. And so, again, very traumatic memories and experiences with my mother's behavior and, you know, her lack of parenting and concern at that time. So while we were children that were fed and not starving, and we did have a small little house and clothes on our bodies, we really didn't have any parental guidance or anybody who was looking out for us first. Now, when my parents divorced, that's when things actually got really super chaotic. As if that life wasn't bad enough, my mother soon got married to this monster that she was having this affair with. And I say monster because this man who would soon become my stepfather was an abuser. And he began to daily beat my mother, daily, like, I mean, every day. And these fights would happen. They wouldn't just be little altercations. They would be bludgeoned fights. Somebody was always hurt. Something was always broken. There was always a hole in the wall or something horrible to prove what had just gone down. And the cops were at our house at an almost daily basis for as long as I can possibly remember. And when the two of them fought each other, nobody ever said, like, you kids get out of here and go to your bedroom. Or my mother never said anything to him, like, stop it. The kids are here. They're watching. It was literally as if we were invisible. And of course, as small children, we would cry out, stop touching my mother. I can still remember, God bless him, my older brother trying to protect my mother and kind of getting thrown out of the way. While this man never beat us physically, he always tortured our mother right in front of us. And the more we would beg for it to stop, it seemed like the more my mother would just lash out and antagonize him so that it would just keep going on and on and on. So for the very formative years of my youth, this is what we watched go on. And everybody knew what was happening in our walls. You know, CPS would visit me at school. The neighbors would check in on us kids. But inevitably, we were pretty much left there to watch this for a long time. Now, we did have visits with my raised father at this point. He would get to see us on Saturdays. So from like 1 to 7 p.m., he would pick us up and then bring us back home. However, my mother was really sick and twisted in her ways. So I can remember a lot of the times when he would come to pick us up for our Saturday visit, she would pull down the shades and lock the doors and let him knock and knock and knock and tell us to be quiet and didn't want us to go with him. And I don't recall what the stories were, but she used to tell us like little lies and reasons why we shouldn't go with him that day or why we can't go with him that day, trying to like turn us against him. And he did know the level of abuse and chaos that was going on inside of our house. He tried to call the cops and CPS many, many times. But, you know, back in the 80s, moms had the parental rights, so she had full custody of us. And law enforcement, they didn't interfere with domestic disputes like they do now. Like they would come to the house, my mother would be clearly a bludgeoned mess, and she would be like, well, I'm not going to press charges on him. And so they would basically get in their car and leave. And once again, it didn't matter that us kids were like sitting there in the periphery, you know, like nobody ever said, well, can I take these kids somewhere? Or we just were left there in disbelief. Like, really, you're not taking this crazy man away that just beat the heck out of my mother? Or really, you're not putting us in the car to go deliver us to our dads or our grandparents or something? So I have to add here too, there was a short period of time when they even kidnapped us and took us to Florida for a short time. I think it was just under a year and I was about 9 years old. Now, mind you, this is back in the days when there wasn't GPS and internet and stuff. So it's not like my father could just figure out what she did. She basically, in the blink of an eye, packed up a U-Haul and moved us to Florida and didn't tell anybody where we were because she didn't want my dad finding out. And it took him a really, really long time to find us there. And when we were there, you know, I think she had this hope that life was going to change and turn around suddenly because we were in this new place with this new start. But of course, the beatings continued, and it wasn't long before our neighbors there knew what was happening inside of our walls, and they were calling the police on a regular basis. And I can recall a time that my brothers and I came home from school and we found my mother, and she was trying to commit suicide. And, you know, you want to talk about big feelings. I can remember at 9 years old that I did not have remorse for my mother. We walked into a bathroom and she had just slit her wrists. Obviously not deep enough to kill herself, but there was still blood and she was in despair. And the three of us are looking on. And I can remember at the ripe age of 9, not feeling sorry for her, but feeling sorry for the three of us children, thinking, what the hell are you thinking, lady? You're going to exit life and leave the three of us here with this crazy, crazy ass man. And so the chaos never, ever died down, for not even for a moment. But the good news is we did eventually pack up and leave Florida and come back to New York. Our house was still there because my mom rented it out while we were gone for that, I don't know if it was like 8 or 9 months. And I want to add here too that my mother, you know, she was drunk all the time and very numb, and she was very abrasive in her words. And she made it very, very clear to us kids all the time that the reason we were still there was because she needed the support check. And I can still recall the arguments she would have with her husband, my stepfather, because he would want us gone. And she would basically be like, we can't afford to live without the money. We need the money. And it was like, we knew it was the only reason that we were there. They would fight about it out loud. Nothing was kept from our ears. Nothing was kept from our eyes. So fast forward to about 11 years old. And I guess this is where you could say I had my first ever glimpse at being an NPE. Now, of course, in hindsight, I did not know that, the caliber of all of this, but this is the clue that happened. So at about 11 years old, I was more like an 11-year-old, 21-year-old, and I had gotten into a heated argument with my mother. And I can remember I threatened her and said something like, I'm leaving. I'm going to go live with Dad. And she said something back to me like, go ahead. He's not your father anyway. And she even then blurted out the name of a man. And she was wasted and she was lashing out at me. And it was very typical of my mother to be verbally abusive and hurtful to people. So at 11 years old, I really didn't even take to heart anything she said to me. Now, I did ask her about it the next day because I knew she was drunk. So the next day when she was sober, I asked her about it and she denied the whole conversation and pretended like she did not say that and that, you know, it wasn't true and she didn't know what I was talking about. So as an 11-year-old, I pretty much tucked that incident away for a long time, too young to process it and what it meant. And also about that same time when I was 11 years old, I finally got my escape from that household. The three of us came home from school one school day, and my mother was actually waiting on the front porch with a couple of little packed bags and suitcases. And she said that my older brother and I were now going to go live with my dad, that we couldn't live there anymore. And she also verbally told us that her husband told her she had to pick between us kids and him because he wasn't putting up with it anymore. And she chose her husband. And so it was time for us to leave. And of course, we were elated to get out of the house. And that's not to say we didn't have compassion for my mother. Of course, there were many times that we wanted to save her and we felt terrible for her. But this had gone on for so, so long that at this point, we just wanted out. And, you know, a person might be thinking here, well, why you two older kids and not your little brother? And so this is a good place, I guess, to insert the fact that my little brother is an NPE also. The difference is his was public knowledge. It was not really talked about per se, like nobody sat us down and said it, but we all knew it. And it was evident to like my grandparents that my older brother and I, we went there. And when my little brother was first born, he did not go there for a really long time. And he wasn't as close to them as we were, even though they were loving and accepting. It was like my mother just didn't let him go there. So my mother had told my little brother his origin story when he was really young, like maybe 6 or 7 years old. She confessed to him that my dad was not his dad. And what had happened was she had cheated on my father with one of his good friends. And so when she was pregnant, she told my father the truth. And my father, you know, I'm sure they had a tumultuous relationship when all of that went down. But in the end, my father was going to assume the baby as his and raise the baby as his. But my brother was told this story. So in my defense, when my mother had said that thing to me that day about my dad possibly not being my dad, and then me questioning her about it the next day, when she said, I don't know what you're talking about, that's not true, I believed her because I thought, well, if my little brother's not my dad's and he knows about it, then I would know about it too, because clearly it's not a big secret. And so that was one of the tallies I put in the box that it all must have just been, you know, a lie and her lashing out. So my brother and I go to my dad's, my older brother and I go to my dad's house, and he had also remarried, and he had a wife, and he had four stepchildren living in his house. There really wasn't space for my brother and I. So we didn't stay there. We ended up going to live with my paternal grandmother, my dad's mom, because my grandpa had just passed away and she could use the help of us around the house. We were now, I was like 11 or 12. So my brother was like 13 and 14. She was very close to us as we were growing up. You know, she was one of those people that hated that we lived in that house of hell, but also, I guess, felt there wasn't really much she could do to get us out of there. So she made sure that our time spent with her, you know, was wonderful. I mean, I can remember when she used to call my parents and like tell these little white lies that she needed yard work done or stuff so that she could get us to come over there and stay with her. And we just would love when that happened. So she raised me through my teenage years. And, you know, that was a sticky situation too, because my grandmother and I had always had this wonderful, beautiful grandmother-granddaughter relationship. And then she got to deal with me when I was a teenager. And, you know, my teenage years after living a life like that were, they were pretty rough. And I kind of hated that she had to be put into that parental, you know, situation, but I was also grateful, obviously, to be there and not with my parents. So much so that I actually emancipated myself from my parents at the age of 14. I went through the court system and legally emancipated myself. So I became a ward of the court. And during all of this time, I had estranged relationships with my mom and dad. So like we would talk and then we wouldn't talk and we would talk and we wouldn't talk. So obviously when I got emancipated, it was a point in my life where I was not really talking to either of my parents. And even though this was her son, whom she had a relationship with, she supported me and always believed in whatever I said I needed to do. So when I told her I was, you know, wanted to clear myself of them, she was in support of it. And so then basically she started receiving money through the court systems to care for me and be my caretaker through those last years of my teenage years. And like I said, I was pretty wild, you know, partying. I met my husband, who I'm still with to this day, way back then. And we were crazy kids. But eventually, that all calmed down. I went away to college. I became a teacher. I was, you know, went away to college for 4 years because I had had a teacher, my third grade teacher, who was a male. He was one of the greatest influences of my life. And I adored him so much that when I was a third grader, I made a decision I was going to grow up and become a teacher just like him. And so I went to college and then I actually got hired in my hometown school district. And I got hired at the exact elementary school that I went to. And my third grade teacher was still working there. So it was like this wonderful full circle moment. He soon after that retired, and I was able to give his retirement speech and share what a wonderful hero he was in my life during such a difficult time. So that was a wonderful thing. And, you know, I started my family and led my normalish life here in my hometown. But I will say, you know, I obviously had issues throughout my adulthood, you know, some of which I could chalk up to my childhood trauma and some not so much. You know, I had really, really bad bouts of food addiction and went through a weight loss journey with weight loss surgery. I had a cancer journey with a very rare cancer that I had to go through. I had an alcohol dependency and had to work really hard at getting sober. And, you know, in these later years of life, I now know that a lot of this relates back to this crazy origin story, if you will. But throughout these years, even, you know, in my 20s, my 30s, my 40s, I did still talk to my mother and father off and on, but again, very estranged. We would go through chunks of years where we were friends and chunks of years where we weren't talking to each other. But in 2019, my mother passed away. She literally drank herself to death. She died of liver cirrhosis. Just a handful of years before that, her sister, my auntie, died in the exact same way, drank herself to death. And that was around the time that I decided I didn't want to drink anymore. And it was really out of fear of turning out to be like my mother. Like I thought, okay, I need to be a better role model for my children. Even though I wasn't the type of person she was, I feared I could eventually get there. So that's about the same time my sobriety journey started. This summer will be 5 years alcohol free for me. And in 2020, I had a pretty big blowout with my raised father, and I have not spoken to him since. So, you know, there were times throughout life that I absolutely pondered what my mother had told me way back in that day when I was about 11 years old, but it didn't plague me. Even when I had my rare cancer diagnosis in 2013, I was actually talking to both of my parents then, and nobody, including me, nobody thought, well, maybe this would be a good time to tell her anything. You know, her medical records are all wrong. You know, nobody had that flag going off. And, you know, I had subconsciously spent an entire lifetime convincing myself that my raised dad must be my dad because I have light eyes. He has light eyes. My daughter, my youngest daughter, is very musically talented. My father was very, very musically talented. She certainly did not get that from me. When I was diagnosed with a rare head and neck cancer, my father's mother, my grandmother that raised me, had passed away from a head and neck cancer. And even though it wasn't the same exact one, I had built this case for, well, maybe, just maybe, he is my father. So that brings us to pretty present time. When my mother died and I was estranged from my father, I said, I was actually taking a course. I was taking an online course with like a life coach, and she had posed the question to us one day. Okay, she said, we're going to do a journal prompt. And the journal prompt is this: a doctor is walking into the room and he's giving you 24 hours to live. I want you to write down what your top three regrets would be if you found out you were going to die tomorrow. And I quickly grabbed my pen and I jotted them down. And then when she came back to the course, she said, now everybody look down at your paper and I want you to pick one that you can do something about right now, this minute, today. And I looked down at my paper and my paper said, I do not want to die without knowing my father is really my father or not. So that day in 2021, I made a conscious decision that I was going to find my truth. So I knew what to do then. I immediately telephoned my brother and I asked him to do an ancestry test with me, my older brother. And I've got to admit here, at the time, I had only ever heard of ancestry. I had no idea what the kit entailed. I definitely had no idea what the website entailed. I just called him and I said, look, Jeff, I had a revelation. I want to know if dad is my dad as well. Will you be willing to take an ancestry test with me? And he agreed because he's kind of a history buff and likes all of that genealogy stuff. And I knew that would be a selling point for him. So we got the kits, we did the swabs, and we sent them off. Now, in my little bubble, I like pictured I was going to get these results some weeks later that were just going to say like half brother, not, you know, full sibling or half sibling. I never in a gajillion years had an inkling about what I was about to open up and discover. So when the email came that said, your results are ready, I was sitting home by myself. It was late in the evening. I was crashing on the couch and the email comes and I click on it, but I'm not too concerned or excited because my brother had sent his test in like a whole week or two after me. So I knew there was like, maybe they got my results, but they didn't have his yet probably in the system. So there was no like, oh my God, here we go. I didn't even get a little bit excited. And then I click and it says, you know, see your results. And the first thing I see is my pie chart. And my pie chart wasn't very alarming because I was Polish and Irish, which I expected. But my raised father took a lot of pride in being very German. And I noticed that there was like a minuscule amount of that. But it wasn't enough to alarm me because there was some there. And I thought, you know, I know how family folklore goes. He was probably misinformed about, you know, his ancestors, and he's just not as much as he thought he was. And then I saw the little tab that says, are your DNA matches? And literally to that, up to that moment, I hadn't even contemplated the fact that other people out there that I'm related to had probably taken this test. So that's the first actual moment where I think my heart started sputtering and my butterflies were in my stomach like, oh, of course other people out there, might not be a lot of them, but somebody probably did it. And I clicked the button. And so this was 2021. And as we all know, the sites update and change and get, you know, more and more scrutinous as time goes on. But my list populated and my top two matches were the ones that my eyes fixated on. So my mother's sister's daughter, my first cousin, had taken the test and she populated in the first spot. And in the second spot was the name of the man my mother gave me when I was 11 years old. And I, you know, did all the things that everybody does when this happens. I went numb. I had an out-of-body experience. I laughed and cried. I was in shock. I couldn't believe this was happening. I felt validated. I felt disgusted. I couldn't even function, as I'm sure you can relate, Lily, and anybody else who's listening. I texted my husband, please get home. I just got my results. He was through the door in what felt like nanoseconds. And I can remember just turning the screen and pointing to the name and then us going down the list and us seeing the names. So I guess this would be a good time to insert the fact that these names were familiar to us because these were names of people we knew. And come to find out, my biological father was also one of my dad's other best friends. So I had known this man's children who were my age. We ran with the same circle of friends. But I think the thing that makes this all super crazy and a little bit unique to my NPE situation is that not only was this my dad's best friend, but it was his best friend that he grew up with who lived right next door to him his whole life. So my grandmother, the lovely woman who raised me and took me in and was the best grandmother a girl could ever ask for, was not actually my grandmother, but the lady who lived right next door to her, who I knew was my grandmother. These people, essentially, my biological family, were in plain sight my entire life. And I will say with certainty that that has been the most difficult part of this whole thing, is that, you know, some people are like, wow, how cool, like you actually saw your biological family, especially my biological grandfather. My biological grandmother died when I was 8 years old, but I had a really wonderful relationship with my grandma's next door neighbor, my biological grandfather. And now all I can think of is, oh my God, who knew this? Did they all know this? Did they not know this? What would it have been like if they did know that I belonged to them? And, you know, initially I was grateful, so grateful that, oh my gosh, at least I knew who they were. But I'm definitely, you know, 2.5 years out, I'm working in therapy and I'm processing a lot of this. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit there is a lot of anger around the fact that those people were right there, my people, my family. And for whatever reason, I was kept from them. You know, in hindsight and after interviewing friends of my mother and father, you know, it sounds like maybe, you know, other people knew that this was a possibility back when I was born, but it was never spoken of. You know, it was a deep, dark secret. And there's just so many synchronicities, you know. So my grandparents and my biological grandparents were best friends. Now, when I go to the cemetery to visit my grandparents, my biological grandparents are buried just feet away from my actual grandparents. And the whole thing is like, It's surreal. I can't help but think there's a reason why I needed to finally find out my truth and why this is all happening. I will admit I don't know what that reason is yet. I did have the opportunity to have a sit down with my biological father. You know, he basically has a lot of shame, obviously, around the fact that these things happened. And that, you know, this is obviously what broke his friendship up with my father. I don't know that my mother ever told him, hey, this is your daughter. My guess is that she probably didn't know. And she was very promiscuous, clearly, back in those days. But I definitely don't just blame my mother for all of this, too. You know, it was the 70s. They were a crazy, wild bunch of friends, you know, from all of the interviewing that I did. They were all partying and hanging out with each other. And, you know, I've done a lot of work around the forgiveness of my mother. She's not the only player in all of this. And the craziest part is that in hindsight, she's the only one who ever gave me my truth. I'm very grateful for that as well. So, you know, today I am still embarking on a very huge healing journey. I dare say to people who are embarking on this, you know, it doesn't necessarily get easier as time goes on, especially when there's rejection involved. You know, my biological father was very kind to sit down with me and hear me out and tell me what little he remembered about the whole situation back then. And, you know, also say, look, you know, I'm in my 70s. I really, you know, don't know how to handle this or know that I want to handle this moving forward. And I haven't, you know, really had any forward movement with him since that all went down 2.5 years ago. However, he did give his blessing, you know, that his sons were going to know the truth, and they do. And they're doing their best to honor me as the, you know, new little sis, while still honoring the fact that their father, you know, has secrecy and shame around the whole thing. So we're still very much kind of in an awkward stage, but there has been a little bit of forward movement, like with those boys. And you know, I met some of the other aunts and uncles who, again, I knew when I was little as my grandmother's neighbors, who I'm now like, hi, uncle this, and hi, aunt that, it's me, your niece. And they're being very, very gentle and welcoming. And for that, I'm super duper, you know, grateful. But this forgiveness journey, this grief and mourning journey, you know, still continues deeply at 2.5 years out. You know, I have to come to the terms that I have no full siblings, that I'm never going to know my biological family and my roots the way that I would like to. I mean, even if everybody's on board and we embrace from this point forward, it's, you still can't go back in time and get back, you know, all that you missed out on and, you know, make up for that loss. It's a grieving process more than anything. And I think that's why I really felt, just like with my first book, I needed to grieve and process my childhood to forgive and understand and let go. And so it basically became only natural that I was going to do the same thing with all of this. And, you know, everybody is aware that I am writing the story. Obviously, the names are changed. You know, I write in my pen name, and the people that I include in my story will also have fake names. And that's not for anonymity's sake, more just out of respect. But clearly, the people who live in my small little city and are familiar with these families basically know what is going down. But I feel that the more my truth is shared and the more that I embrace who I am, regardless of how I came to be, the more human and loved I feel. And I need all the players involved in this to understand that I'm not doing it to hurt anybody. I'm not doing it to be selfish. I'm doing it because it's a necessary part of me evolving and coming to terms with the fact that I was, in fact, you know, born of an affair, maybe even a one-night stand, and kept a secret all this time, you know. And I look at these people who look just exactly like me, and I think, oh my God, no wonder I had this estranged relationship with my raised father my whole life. I mean, I look exactly like these people. And, you know, I think about that day I sat down with my biological father. I couldn't even concentrate on what we were saying because looking into his face was so freaking crazy. And I kept thinking, oh my God, he's got to be thinking the same thing I am. Like, this is just nuts. And, you know, looking at his body build and the way he walked and the antics he made and just wondering like, oh my gosh, how much of that, how much of what I do did I get from him? Because I look at my own daughters, right? And I see how they're just like my husband. And then, you know, you sit back and you wonder, well, is that because they were raised under the same roof? Or is that like a family, you know, DNA trait? And these questions just continue to run rampant. So I'm writing about them and processing them. And my story is almost done. And I'm hoping to share it with the world this summer. And I hope that people can come to the level of love and acceptance with their self that I have. In fact, I'm toiling right now with the subtitle of the book. The book is again going to be called When You Shake the Family Tree, but I think the subtitle is going to be something along the lines of A Story of Love and Acceptance Through a DNA Surprise. And hopefully that will resonate with a lot of the people who are tuning into this podcast who also need resources and healing.
Sounds like you have found so much healing through writing, or as you say, grieving and processing through writing this memoir, writing this book. Has there been anything else that's been helpful for you in your healing journey?
Definitely tuning in to all of these podcasts, you know, not just giving a plug to you, but everybody who's out there doing them. I mean, there is just something astounding about being able to hear other people's stories. And even though they're so different, there's that common, you know, theme of the lies and the whole longing to belong and wanting your truth and the way people act when you finally know and you're trying to get it. I also did the course with Eve Sturgis with her journal, which was a writing processing course that was extremely therapeutic and also gave me a lot of the content that I will be using in my book. I do tune in to a lot of the group therapy sessions that these same podcasters offer on a monthly basis. I tune in and I share my story there. I'm hoping to someday make it to one of the retreats or the summits because you can clearly see the value in those things. And maybe someday I'll even have a chance to share my book once it's out at one of those things and connect with these people that I have been relying on. But I will say too that all the way up until this point of my NPE discovery, I had never, ever once in my life done therapy. And I clearly said, okay, it's time. And I searched out a therapist who does EMDR in my area. And I've been working with her, I think, for a little over a year right now. And I will say this, I don't think anybody can get through it without some form of counseling or therapy. It has been detrimental to my healing journey, forgiveness journey, and acceptance. And I'm still working with her, and it's deep work. I'm not going to say that it's easy. It's very, very deep work. I'm going back to a lot of those childhood wounds and healing them and giving that little inner child what she needs. And I highly recommend that anybody who can relate to any parts of these stories of mine with the chaotic childhood component, especially, that you consider therapy, because while finding the right therapist might not be the easiest thing alive, there are some excellent, you know, resources out there. And that's probably been pivotal in where I am right now today.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I was just in a recording this morning and the practitioner said, she noticed some bilateral eye movement with me when I was talking about reliving a traumatic experience with my mom. And I don't understand the full science behind EMDR, but I have done a session myself and I am thinking about doing more. So I am glad you brought that up.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting, the different modalities that are out there. And, you know, I basically, when I started my sobriety journey 4.5 years ago, that's the first time I tuned into things like meditation and stuff like that. And a lot of that my rituals here have also helped me to be more accepting and understanding and patient. You know, that's the thing, is like, we all want to hit the fast forward button to like where we're all healed and evolved and moved on from this mess. But, you know, the message is in the mess. And unfortunately, there's a lot of truth to that. And it doesn't go away. It just morphs and changes and looks different. And we have to be prepared to continue to change our goggles as we go along. And it does begin to look different and morph and change.
If people wanted to get in touch with you, could they do that?
Absolutely. I am an open book, literally. I have a website, which is called justbeingjill.com, just like it sounds. When you go on there, you can find my contact information. It also has a link there about my first memoir, and there's a little blurb there about my upcoming memoir as well. So I hope that people will watch for the news on that. And you can subscribe at the bottom, because as I get closer to the launch of my book this summer, I will be, you know, sending out newsletters and stuff to tell people about the book when it is ready to come out. But I am also on Facebook as Margot Riley, the author, and that's Margot, M-A-R-G-O. Riley is R-E-I-L-L-Y. So you can find me there as well. And I am Just Being Jill on Instagram as well.
I will put the links for those down below. Thank you so much for giving us all this information. I'll admit it was really hard to listen to what you had been through as a little girl. My heart just went out for you. And I can completely understand why your first book is called When the Apple Falls Far from the Tree, because I don't know how to say this appropriately, but you, from what you have been through as a child, you just sound, so healed, so mature. I'm really sorry for what you went through as a child. And thank you for going through all this today. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's my intention to show other people that even though we are dealing with things like NPE stories or chaotic life circumstances, we always have the ability to work through and get to the other side.
These stories are here for us to identify with. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, email npestories@gmail.com. You do not have to give any identifying information. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, I'd like to hear from you. Subscribe to this podcast to hear more. Come heal with us.